I'm loud. You're going to turn me down. Shh. I'm really loud. Too loud. Huh? I know. Miller, turn me down just a little bit. People taking their eardrums out, I think, you know, might be a little loud. Who do the A's play tonight? Tampa Bay. They don't have no baseball down in Tampa Bay. I would have been here a little bit earlier tonight, but youth minister and his wife and child came by. And I am not kidding. They said, "What time is it?" I said, "It's 6:15." And they jumped up and ran out of the house like they were late. Made me feel bad. It's like I was going to wait another 10 minutes before I left. I want to tell y'all something. I want to start with a little story, and then we'll move on. I don't like Square 40 when Gary's not there. They don't see me. When I walk in there in the mornings to eat breakfast and sit down with Gary, they come over immediately and take my order. And just, I mean, I feel like I'm just royalty. I went in there this week, and they didn't even come by and take my order. I just got up and thought, I'll go somewhere else. So I walked out, and I'm pretty sure they didn't even know I was sitting down and left. I thought, I'll go over at Pat's. So I went to Pat's, and I ordered. As soon as the woman walked by, I said, I want coffee and pancakes. 45 minutes later, they brought my pancakes out. I'm not going to eat breakfast till Gary gets back in town. You hear me? I'll eat it at the house. Jeff, I appreciate your... I need to lose some pounds. That's the truth. I would let that hurt my feelings, but it's the truth. It's the truth. I've thought a lot about it here lately, which I don't usually think about it, but I have. I've got to do something. I'm going to wait till I get back from Disney. And I'm a little mentally crazy. I'm going to just put it out there for you tonight. You can absorb it however you want to. I will be until I get back from this trip. I don't know what it's like for you to go somewhere with your parents, but I'm going to be a constant letdown. I'm just going to be honest with you. I'm going to let them down constantly. The last time we went to Disney was one of the most wonderful trips I ever had with my parents. Until on the way home, my dad got so mad he yelled at me and made me get out of the car, and he drove. And I'm not saying I didn't deserve it. I'm just saying it's just, I don't know if you've ever been a letdown to your parents before, but I know in this upcoming week at some point I'm going to really let them down. I'm going to really let them down. So that's sort of where I am mentally right now. No, we were physically on the way home. And it's one of those deals where if I wouldn't have gotten out, it would have gotten physical. Do you know what I'm saying? You're going to get out and let me drive. And I was like, yes, sir. And if I would have stayed in that chair, my wife would have seen something she's never seen in her family before. A knife fight. And I didn't have a knife. It would have been him fighting with a knife. Now I'm on that point. Let me just say one more thing. So at the fish fry, I loved every second of that. I wish we could do that every week. Do you hear me? I loved it. I know James is a good fisherman. He's not that good, though. He couldn't feed us every week with fish. But we're at that, and I guess David Staggs hasn't heard my stories or whatever about my daddy. So mama made him leave his knife in the house, okay, on purpose, okay, because she knew, like, buddy, don't get out there and hurt your son or nothing. So we're out there, and he goes, I ain't got a knife. And out of nowhere, David Staggs pops his knife out and hands it to my daddy. And my daddy just starts running it up and down my shirt. And I'm looking at David like, you don't understand. I mean, he really will cut me. And, I mean, he just running it up and down my shirt. Like, come on, big boy. I said, Daddy, what do you want? Quit. Put that up. Come on now.
I like you, Daddy.
Yeah, I'm sure you do. Anyway. And if I took all this stuff about people talking about being, where were you? I had four chiefs and I was the only Indian. Do you understand? And I don't know how well you work in them circumstances, but one scream at me, here, do this. And I'd start doing that. And German, he can't hear nothing. He's over there making hush puppies by himself. He's, bet, come over here and do it. I'm like, I'll be right over there. And I just walk back in the house and come out 40 minutes later. That's how it worked for me. Anyway, so tonight we're going to deal with more questions. And like I said, I'm a little off kilter. I actually went and bought a Red Bull and drank it, if that helps you any. I know, again, y'all think, well, that jack you up? No, I'm jacked up. I'm trying to get unjacked up. We're going to deal with if a man gains the whole world but loses soul, what does it profit? And then we're going to take it from Mark 8, verse 36. If you want to turn there, Mark 8, verse 36. What good is it for a man to gain the whole world yet forfeit his soul? Now, I translated initially there profit because I think that word as a kid meant a whole lot to me in understanding this verse. And I think it's the one word that's sort of stayed universal and stayed true through time. Everybody in this room knows what profit is, right? Now, if I were to talk about gain, you'd understand that too, but I think profit puts it on it something we all understand. And that's what we're going to talk about tonight. Sometimes when I approach something like this, a golden text, I have to ask myself questions. And I've given y'all more than I have ever given a congregation. Insights into my brain. And I know that I'm not trying to say that that's a good or bad thing, but like how I've recently talked about reading the Bible, that's something that has profited me immensely. Recently we did the story of the lost sheep, and I told you that Miss Dolly came up to me, like she said, Ben, you didn't have to make that disclaimer. No one had ever talked to me about shepherds and that. I'd always talked about the lost. But it's one of those things, if you'll take that passage, that's not something that I invented or even got creative about. It was what Jesus was doing, you know? And if you can slow it down and back it up just a little bit, you know, and read it, you know, he says, putting you in the place of the shepherd, what if you had 100 sheep and one of them went and got lost? And so he's placing you as the shepherd. And that is, again, it may be something that is new for you because people haven't talked about it, but it's not new because it's there. It's there in the scripture, right? And when I come to this idea of this verse, I understand how tainted and how full of baggage it is for every one of us. Because we have heard this sermon so many times, and we understand what this passage is really driving home. So, if I'm going to talk about this, if we're going to do a lesson on what does it profit, then I feel like I am going to have to bury myself in this text and I'm going to have to read it through crazy eyes, right? I'm going to have to somehow make myself read it new. Now, there are times for me where I can do that by going to the Greek. I can go to the Greek and I can really get something very important about it. And for me, when I read this verse, there are definitely Greek things that jump out at me. And again, I think James chapter 1, consider it all joy, my brethren, when you fall into different trials. Now, that's a loose translation. But the word count it is a financial term, okay? And it has to do with a scale of weight. You know, weighing something to see how much something is worth. And so what James is telling them before he begins his wonderful book of practicality, and I've told you this before, if I haven't, the reason people call James practical is because he gives one sentence power punches and moves on. Where I would suggest to you that Paul is very practical, it just takes him 12 chapters to be practical. He's building an argument. So in the beginning of James, he wants us to understand that we have to place a value on what it is to be God's child. I think this is something that we can come to this verse and understand. What does it profit a man if he gain the whole world yet lose his soul? The question here is about profit. So it's about value. And we have to understand as God's child, there is a time, Casey Kephart, to place value on what it is to be God's child. And that time is not in the middle of the storm. Hey, Julie, didn't I just see you in the classroom back there? Okay, let's talk about Julie just for a minute. Let me tell you all this. I just walked into a classroom where there were 78 kids and four teachers, and now one of those teachers has left the classroom. You think they're going to make it? They'll be fine. That's a lot of babies. I would leave the church. And I think that value-wise, not worth it. I'd go to Pulaski Street. Would you? How old are those babies?
Whew.
There's a lot of 2 and 3 year olds. We're blessed. We're blessed. And if you have a drive or passion for 2 or 3 year olds, we got a room for you. We got a room for you here at church. I don't know. There really were like 10 of them in there, wasn't there? There's a lot. Okay, sorry, I got distracted. Remember my brain. Back to profit. The time to add or to discern our value of what it is to be God's child is not in the middle of a storm. Because if we wait to that moment to discern our value, then we're gonna give it up. And I always have my brother in mind when I come to a passage like this. And my brother has started listening, by the way, to my lesson, so I have to be careful. Brandon, I love you. I'm going to be nice tonight. But I think about Brandon when I come to this passage. Do you hear what he says? Do you hear what God says right here? Now, I don't know if you've ever paid any attention to this. How many of you have seen bad people have success? Have any of you ever seen bad people have success? How many of you have seen good people not have success? Y'all seen any of that in your life? Have you ever seen anyone weigh that against God? Why do bad people have success and why do good people not? Have you ever seen anybody weigh that against God? If you hadn't, come on in my family, because I got a few folks you need to meet because they can weigh it. I've seen it too, not just in my family, in the world. But do you hear what Jesus says here? Let's just break this down for a moment. What does it profit a man if he gains the whole world? Now, I'm not saying that I need you to believe that this is possible. I'm hearing it, wanting you to hear that Jesus says, what if? Do any of you in here know any man that has gained the whole world? Anybody? Does anybody in here know a man that's come close? Do any of you in here know someone who's wealthy and content? I do. Do what now? That's true. Have you ever met anybody who's wealthy and content? Anybody? Anything that is worldly here. I mean, obviously, when we think about gain, it has to be. He is weighing two things here: spiritual and physical. And so, if it is physical gain, then it is not spiritual gain. Is what he's saying here. Don't you feel sorry for that person's spouse when they say that? Do y'all feel sorry for that person? If my wife ever says that, I'm leaving her. Because if I said it, I hope she'd be just as mad. Look, I love my kids. I had a perfect marriage before I had children, though. I did. We loved each other so much back then. I love my kids so much. And tonight, Macy drove me here to the building. And I know that there's a lot of that to come, right? Yeah. Yeah, she drove me here, and it was good. It was good. And Charlie, but anyway, never mind. Let me get past all that. But yes, I understand that. But I would say that counting kids as a blessing is both a spiritual and physical. I think that's a hard one to define. But yes, anything that's it, you know anybody that's financially wealthy and content? I do. I have met those people. But I'm going to go with what Pam said, it's a rare thing. It is a rare thing. How many of you have been after the world? Have any of you in here ever chased the world? None of you have ever chased the world?
To a degree.
Let me tell y'all I was so afraid when I first got married that I was going to be a financial failure, that I was one of the most documented financial people I'd ever met in my life. I had a Roth IRA, when I first got out of college. And after we'd been married for 8 years, we had $45,000 saved for retirement. I'm not telling you that because it's a brag. I'm telling you that. The only reason I'm telling you that because we don't have any of that now. If I still had that, it'd be different. I wouldn't tell you that, but I don't. But I was this hugely documented person. I was not going to be a financial failure. But then I got humbled immensely. Immensely. I have taken welfare monthly to survive. We got milk every 2 weeks from WIC when we were in Mississippi, and I don't know how we would have made it if we wouldn't have got milk. I'm financially one of the worst people I know in the world today. And I'm not talking about like, I've got to get better. It's one of those things where I've come through humility and now I've got to get better. I've got to start paying attention again and all that good stuff. But when I came out, I focused so much on that and God had a different route for me. And y'all have heard me say it before. I was paying my bills every month in Memphis. And then I got tired of it and I started paying them every other month. And what happened with that was people that I owed money got much more worried about it than I had been worried about it before that moment. I'm not trying to tell you that we need to not pay our debts. I'm trying to tell you that there was a moment in my life where financially it was going to happen. I took my very first preaching job because of the salary. When they laid it down, I didn't even think about anything else. I didn't really know what else to ask for. They offered me $42,000. And for me, that was, I don't know the year. I could think back. But that's the most anybody in my family had ever made in a salary-wise. I knew that, and I knew I wanted it. So yeah, I would say earthly gain has definitely been something I've chased. But let's go back to this idea of the possibility here that you could gain the whole world. Why do we chase the world? I couldn't get you to admit that you've chased it, maybe a few of you. But I'm going to suggest that probably everyone in this room at some point has chased the world a little bit. Why do we chase it? So you think maturity?
I think maturity comes into play a lot. I think we continue to grow the whole time. It has a big aspect into it.
Okay.
Because we change what we're chasing as our roles change.
Do you think about what nursing home you're going to be in? Has anybody ever thought about that? Nobody in here thinks about that? So Cody and China were talking, they were in our house today, and they were talking about the possibility of moving and building a home, you know, they're dreaming and all that. And I remember that. You know, I've lived in 17 different homes. Think about that one. So I don't really, in the home I live in now, I am so blessed. Of course, I told Cody and China today that Mr. Sharp sold me the whole thing for $50,000. Right down there, we live in that whole little... I don't own that in any form or fashion, right? I'm pretty sure Mr. Sharp owns me in a reality, but I'm so blessed. I am so blessed. Do you hear me? And I think about, they were talking about all that. I said, what about y'all? What are y'all going to do? I said, well, Hannah Reed and I are definitely going to the nursing home when we get older. I mean, we're going to be there one day. But I believe that if we do, or at least my experience with people that remain faithful, we do get to a point where certain things really matter and certain things really don't matter. And we're going to talk about that in just a minute. What else? Anybody else got anything? Why do we chase earthly things? Happiness. Socially. Yeah, absolutely. And hey, if I've learned anything in our small little town of Lawrenceburg, it means something to be somebody when you go into Square 40 and eat breakfast. Ah, So, yeah, it does. I mean, and we all understand that. Yeah, I've not paid attention to the news a lot lately. Anytime something big happens and they get on that 24-hour cycle on it and this impeachment thing, I'm so sick of it. I don't care if it happens or doesn't happen. I know that may sound terrible. So I haven't heard a whole lot of news lately because that's all they want to talk about. And what you're talking about, by the way, I wish it had a dislike button a long time ago. I'd have been top on social media, I'm telling you, because I'd have disliked so much stuff, but I'm not on there. I understand what you're saying. I think that's a value. Again, it gets to value. People trying to receive value, trying to come up with something that will go viral or whatever. Okay, we're going to talk about the last part here, and then I'm going to let this lesson be done. What does the choice of life look like? What happened? Caroline. Dadgummit, I missed her. Okay, good. Y'all say when. Just shake your head. I'll take care of her. What does the choice of life look like? We understand what it is to choose the world, but what does the choice of our soul mean? What does that mean when we choose life? What does that look like? You guys take your time. You've really been chatty tonight, so develop your thoughts. I'm going to teach this way for now, and I don't want to miss Caroline. What does it look like? Well, if a man gains the whole world but loses his soul, what if the man doesn't choose the world? What does it look like? You choose your soul. What does it look like? There's still accountability. Definitely. Looks like all of us. Boy, Jeff. I think that's good. I want you to think about, he bowed. I want you all to think about this. Mr. Sharp included. Don't judge me, Mr. Sharp. I want you all to think about, as a younger individual, the very first time you encountered someone that truly knew God. Now, I'm not talking about the preacher that you thought was God probably at some point, but I'm talking about the very first time in your life that you encountered someone that knew God. And I make jokes about this all the time, but I mean it. I mean, the force is strong. You know, boom, you get close to these people, and you just, there's something different about them, right? And I could go through so many different names with you. So many different names of people as a kid that impacted me huge. And I could start with my own family. I start always with my grandmother, Hertling. Now, I watched my mama read Harlequin romances like they were going out of style. And then my daddy get up in his whitey-tighties and me look at him and think about, what did she marry him for? But at the same time, my mom would read her Bible, and I remember that, and it affected me. And my grandmother had a verse from the Word of God for every situation. At the same time, we did watch Golden Girls when I was younger, and I didn't understand how dirty they were until I got older. Caroline. Thank y'all. That made my night. So, does anyone jump into your mind? Come on now. Miss Angie? Your grandmother. What was her name? Muzzy? Muzzy. I thought you said Muggsy. I'm like, I've heard of him. Muzzy. So what is it that she was, what made her different? Yeah. All right, good. Muzzy. I got to remember that. So, Miss Juanita, what about you? Charlie's mother? Okay, what was her name?
Odell.
Odell. And what about her was so different than anybody else you'd encountered? That kindness thing, that's real. And look, there are so many people in here that are kind people. And I told you, Jeff made fun of recently Miss Kathy, like, I don't think she has to work at being kind, you know. And I believe that to be true. And I think probably, I don't know if Miss Kathy's always been that way. I like to think that she's been kind, but also I think that maturing in Christ makes people kind. You know, I have a father, and y'all have heard me talk a lot about who can't read and write. And I mean, any God he's ever received, he's either received it through other humans or through someone preaching or teaching. And I remember riding in a vehicle with my dad and a boy named Kyle Hawkins, who was black. And I remember this man screaming a racist slur at my father while we were riding down the road in Iuka, and him pulling over. And he wouldn't let me and Kyle get out. And I don't know what he said, but Kyle knew, you know. Kyle knew. And Daddy walked back, and I'm pretty sure that man would never yell that when Kyle was in our vehicle again. And it was one of those moments for me, like, I know the world would look at my father and think lots of things, but yet, being an unread man, he also knew what it was to be kind to everyone. And that's one of those traits for me. You know, I've heard me talk about Mama Chick. She had it. Lost. She loved people that most people would consider unlovable. And I know you've met some people like, well, they're hard to love. And Mama Chick would love them, man. She would love them. It was just that kindness. Somebody else. Give me somebody. Brad? Pretty good person. Come on now. That's the worst comment I've ever heard.
That was a good comment.
Now, tell me this. So you weren't born on the mission field, were you? That's why you like Vanderbilt. That's definitely a mission field. Thank you.
I mean, we moved back
when I was two. Okay. So tell me about your grandmother, your dad's mother. So what grew out of her that was different than the other people around you that you saw? Another big one. Ooh. No, I get that. And y'all have heard me talk about, if you've not heard me talk about this, people don't do this anymore, but you've seen the people with the walkers and they'd have them tennis balls on them, you know what I'm talking about? And have them tennis, so I slide them jokers. And I thought about it as a kid, I just get like a little tummy ache, and I wasn't wanting to go to church, and here we was. And then I told you about the man named Arthur that I met in New Albany, Mississippi, that would change my life forever. He could not hear or see. He had been blinded by a kamikaze jet in World War II in Pearl Harbor. And one Thursday, he died. And they brought him back to life. I'm talking about how he was dead, and they brought him back to life. And that Sunday, he was at church. He could not hear, and he could not see. And I had to ask him, right? I had to get to him, and I had to figure out some way to communicate to him. Why? And look, I believe the Lord let you off this Sunday. And he said to me, I cast my vote today. I voted with my feet, and I voted. And God knows I voted. And he went on about his business. That's all he would do. And that changed me, right? A man that was... He couldn't participate like anybody else in the auditorium, but yet he was there because he wanted to cast his vote. Yes, that's different. So I definitely get that. And I think about those people with those new tennis balls I used to make fun of when I was a kid. Yeah, they knew something that I didn't know. They knew something that I didn't know. Somebody else, give me somebody. Ed Ingram. I didn't get to know Ed very long. And if it weren't for Mr. James, I wouldn't have known him like I did know him. But, you know, it didn't take... I will say that I didn't get to know Ed, and that may have been one of those things where I would have been hugged, I understand, a whole lot more if I would have known him better than I knew him. But what I will say that you don't have to spend much time around Ed to know that this man was kind, unlike most. And then to find out he's a diesel mechanic. I don't know what your thoughts are when you visualize a diesel mechanic, what you think about. I will have to honestly tell you that it is not Ed Ingram. That's not what I visualize. But yeah, I get that. Oh, that was good. That was a good one. Ken, absolutely. And, you know, I did not get the opportunity that most of you that grew up here, but one of my favorite things, and I always pick on Matt here, is watching Matt and Casey come to church here and watch how Ken and Matt grew together so quickly because of who Ken and who Matt are. That was awesome. And my understanding is that's the experience of so many of you guys. And I'm not trying to get Matt mad at me or throw anything. He's bigger than I am. I got to be careful here. But you know that's special. That's special. Mr. Angie, who you got? Your mom. And I love that. And I think y'all have heard me say this before. My grandmother, one of the things that stuck out immediately about my grandmother being different was when we broke something in her house and we broke something in my mom and daddy's house. My grandmother would always say it's earthly and tell us, you know, pick it up, clean it up, and then go outside and play. She wouldn't lose her temper or cool or anything. There was nothing in her house worth more than the growth of us and God. I mean, it was just not there. So I think that's good. That's good. Somebody else. One more and I'm going to move on. Jeff, did you say one? Okay. Well, go ahead, Jeff. The first time you encountered somebody when you were younger that knew God. I mean, there was no question. This individual knew God. Was fair. That's awesome. Right. I think that is and that's it, in my opinion. How we know that we've chosen life over earthly gain is that we are promised something in seeking our soul. We're promised to grow in the knowledge of God and to grow in the knowledge of His Son. And I believe it is that matures us or moves us forward in life to see things more important, more important. You know, I have tried my best to go to these games and watch Charlie play soccer and not really care. I mean, I don't care. But at some point, I'm not as focused as I should be. And, you know, I get to caring a little bit, right? And it's not that I don't want my kids to win. I do. But I want them to understand that there's something so much more. But at some point, sometimes, usually I get a little carried away and I may yell. And I'm not talking about yell at any specific person. That's usually not who I am. The only time I've ever really gotten seriously angry at one of these games is when he got hurt and he started crying. And I knew he wasn't hurt. I knew he was angry. And he didn't know what to do with that anger. And I wish I could have just indwelt his body at that moment, because I could have showed him what to do with that anger. But it's probably best I wasn't that person and I couldn't show him what to do with that anger. Having said all of that, I pray that my kid understands what it is to be a teammate and what it is to be a child of God. And I believe that experiencing that is so important for us, because God wants us to be a team and he wants us to know him and have him first in our life. And if you've ever seen someone at a young age display God-like characteristics, you know how profound and how powerful and impactful it is on that community. And that's why we stress it so much, is trying to bring our kids up and build a great foundation, because we want them to be huge, you know, mirrors of God into this world. And what we need to remember is the best way that we can ever do that is not sit down and preach to them, but to give them a living example to follow. I'm going to stop. I've said enough. And there's my favorite Lucy. Have you ever noticed how Brad